to participate in this review. And so this is going to look like a relay race as we pass this back and forth. Several times during the conference, mention has been made that the average age in this conference is 41. And each time that announcement is made, I feel a little wincing and drawing away from the younger folks, and immediately I develop a very great guilt feeling for bringing that average where that it is. Now, I would like to suggest to Donald McGilchrist the next time this is figured that he use some kind of a grade on a curve system, you know, where he can make certain eliminations and the average will be much more realistic. Many years ago, there was a Scottish expert in geopolitics who always used the map of the world that's over on my left rather than the one that is on my right. It depends on what part of the world you live in, which map that you use. And, of course, this one over here, which I guess you folks over here can't see that. Mayor, can you see that? China means Middle Kingdom. A little more realistic. Well, at least Dr. McKinder referred to this kind of a map when he developed his famous Heartland Theory. And that was that the world is divided into the World Island and the Outlying Islands. And he pointed out that the World Island of Asia, Europe, and Africa contains 2/3 of the world's land area and 7/8 of its population. And so we and Emma are laboring in the west end of the World Island. The territory, which belongs to our division, consists of 90 countries with a population of 1.3 billion, or about 1/4 of the population of the earth. And when I came to that figure, I noticed another statistic, that we who are here from Emma represent 1/4 of the people in this leadership conference. So our leadership is well distributed as far as the world population is concerned. We have a staff of 300 with official navigator ministries in 16 countries. We have resident staff in 3 more countries and visiting ministries in 4 more. So we have some kind of a ministry in 23 of the 90 countries that make up the geographic area where we are laboring. The navigators have had a ministry in 2 countries where we are not operating at present. One is Uganda, where we had representatives in 1972 and 73, just about 1 year. And then one of the early navigators, Walden Scott, went to Cyprus and had a ministry for a while, which I'm sure had a great deal to do with his return to the Middle East to open up the ministry in Lebanon. The first link between the ministry in Emma and the United States was a result of Joe Simmons, a Britisher, visiting the United States while he was in the Army and met the navigators in 1944. The next link was in 1948 when Dawson Trotman met Gene Carson in the Netherlands. After that, there was the ministry to the American military in Europe, and then Dawson Trotman's ministry with the Billy Graham Association. So there were several of these efforts that began to merge as the ministry got underway. Now, as we go through the early history of Emma, the name that occurs most often, we hear most often, is that of Doug Sparks. And I know Doug's going to have us over to his home this evening. Is Doug here this evening? Oh, yeah, here he's over on this side. Well, I anticipate that several times during the meeting that you're going to think that someone else is using an overhead projector over here in this section, because I think that Doug has every right to beam again and again as he listens again to what God has been doing. And Doug, you have every right to beam. And then the name of Roger Anderson, who has been associated with every ministry in Europe, is very prominent as we consider the early history. And then Joyce Turner. We're going to hear from her tonight, too, and her name is very prominent in the development of this ministry. Doug went to Europe in 1958 and stayed until 1968. For his first 4 years over there, the military ministry and the national ministry were all one. I relieved Doug of the military ministry in Europe in 1962 and was responsible for it until 1966, and had no idea that Doug and I would later on be followed, following the same ministry. I make it very clear that I did not replace Doug and Emma, because nobody can replace him. I have followed after Doug in Emma. Instead of using charts and maps, for the most part tonight, we're going to use people. And the country leaders are going to give a brief of the history of Emma. Now, I wasn't told for this session what kind of history to give. And in my study of history, there's ancient history and then medieval history and modern history. So that's what we're going to include in the history, because I firmly believe that although ancient history is very interesting, that the real history of the navigators is being written today, the most important part of it. Now, most of, or all of the people who are going to give reports tonight are very articulate and could do everything that Demosthenes did, that Dr. Sanders told us about last night. And we felt it wouldn't be fair to turn them loose on you, because instead of wanting to fight Philip, I'm afraid they'd recruit all of you to join us over there. So for the most part, to avoid that problem, and also to conform to the time limit, at least some are going to read what they've written, because this has been written. It has been practiced in front of a mirror and timed with a stopwatch out here so that everybody can do what they're expected to do within the allotted time. And so we're going to call first on Roger Anderson, because of the length of the time we've had a ministry in Britain and the development of it, why he's allowed to fudge just a little bit over the 3 minutes.
I forgot to tell you, Jim, Great Britain has three countries, Wales, Scotland, and England, so I really should have 9 minutes. Thank you. And our work in Great Britain, we think of four people in light of our ministry. First, Joe Simmons, we've heard his name. He left Liverpool, went to New Zealand in 1953. Then I think some of you have heard of Dawson Trotman and Lorne Sanney, who went to England in 54 and 55 with the Billy Graham Crusades. Charles Clayton, our man for Scotland, just told me the other day he received a letter asking him to speak just like Dawson Trotman and Lawrence Sanney spoke in 54 and 55. And as a result of their ministry, we have a very good board of directors. Sir Cyril Black, a friend of Lawrence, former member of Parliament, he was the one that allows me to stay in England, because they interviewed me, said they didn't want any more Christian workers there. And I said, well, I know Sir Cyril Black. That took care of it. And some of you have been told how to make good tea by our generals, Major Wilson Haffenden. And then lastly, Joyce Turner. And it's a real privilege to be there and being blessed by Joyce's prayers. Joyce arrived in 56 to do the follow-up work for some of the girls that came to Christ in the Haringey Crusade. She and these girls began to pray for all the cities and counties of Great Britain, and we're benefiting from those prayers today. Very quickly, I'd like to just use this little machine here to go into our history. Basically, it's in the periods of time. From 56 to 66, we have the extensive growth of the Navigators among the women's ministry, and our first missionary among girls, Maureen Dawson, went to Norway in 1966. To help develop the men's work, Ed Rice and Gordy Nordstrom came to Great Britain in 62. Gordy Nordstrom to Manchester, Ed Rice to London. And then we have the period from 66 to 76, where there is an emphasis that went from the community ministry into the student ministry. And excellent results in Loughborough, where Rob Powery Smith began the ministry, and students began to be attracted to this ministry. And in Loughborough and in Manchester, there are 11 men and 4 women who later became Navigator staff. And then in 76 to 80, we began a community ministry with a community philosophy, identity, and a development in our 4 largest cities. And then in this time, we had a consolidation of our work in the student work, ably done by Steve Covell. Now, in Great Britain, we have this size of staff. We have, without wives, 61, including our wives. We have 91. This includes our office staff and our missionary staff. And then in these countries, we have missionaries in 8 countries. And then in Great Britain, we are located in 20 universities and 4 of the large cities of Great Britain, where we have our community ministries. What did I do wrong there?
Faster.
Faster. How's my time coming? Okay. In light of the future, there are some things that do excite us here in Great Britain. And some of these promises we could go into. But particularly Ezekiel 36 through 38, some of our old-timers, that promise really grips us. One of the encouraging things is to see our younger men and women. Ezekiel chapter 36, verses 36 to 38, we are gripped by that promise that God is going to give us flocks and flocks of men and women. And in Great Britain right now, there's a sense of urgency. Not only for laborers and leaders to be raised in Great Britain, I mean outside Great Britain, but also there's a new sense of urgency to raise up those laborers and leaders in Great Britain as well. And Isaiah 52, 3 and 4, you all know. And then I'd like to end up with Haggai 2:9. Some of our younger men have been gripped by this promise, and it's gripping all of us. And that is, the glory of this present house will be greater than the glory of the former house. And we believe this. And in light of the 80s, in light of our strategy, we have... I'm looking at Dave Grissom. He's supposed to be my prompter. I've got 30 seconds left. So we've got, in light of the direction of our work, read that. I won't go into that because I don't have the time. It's very simple, but we want to heighten the momentum in our EEE ministry. A strong testimony and effective EEE in our student ministries. And in our community ministries, there's nothing different in our community ministries than in our student ministry. It's an EEE ministry. And among singles, men and women, couples, as well as students. And then leadership. A leadership training in our stimulus improved, and we're developing in England 5 what we call ministry and training networks, where Our staff will have peer stimulus as well as leadership for each one that are on our staff. And lastly, as I mentioned, we have a great burden to have an impact in Britain as well as all nations. And this year, in light of all nations, we're sending Baig back to India. Clive Jedry Fisher is going to Nigeria. And we need to help Paul Stanley out too. Doug's going to have to miss Pam, and we're sending her to Germany. So thank you for your prayers, and thank you for your time.
We're going to give these reports in the order that the ministry developed in Emma. And chronologically, the next place that the navigators began was in Germany and in France. So we're going to ask Paul Stanley, who is regional director and who is the country leader for France, for Germany, to come. And in addition to this, Paul is going to share a little bit about a personal ministry in which he has recently become engaged. And you may want to hand this recording back to me or somebody else when you give that, and then to be followed by Dean.
Ready, go! This doesn't count the time, right? Well, West Germany, land of castles, Mercedes-Benz, and Volkswagens, and the powerful German Mark. Almost completely devastated after World War II, it has built back to an amazing power that it was in the earlier centuries. It has also influenced Western thought and life through its philosophers, theologians, and economists throughout the last centuries. These are some of the facts here about Germany. 62 million people, not including East Germany. It is a state church, a strong state church in this country. 47% are Protestant or the Lutheran Church. About 43% are Catholic. And of those, including the Free Church and some in the Protestant churches, about 1 to 1.5% are evangelicals. There are about 41 universities. They have many other colleges as well. There are about 1.6 million students in Germany. The ministry began in the early 1950s with counselor training for the Billy Graham Crusades, and then followed by many other counselor training with other evangelists throughout Germany and also visiting evangelists. In about the mid-60s, this began to phase out, and a new phase began in Germany with Gordy Strom. He's already been mentioned with Horst. Gordy Strom came and began the first student ministry in 1967 in Bochum, right here. 2 years later, he moved down, leaving the ministry with someone else, and to start a ministry in Aachen. From that Aachen ministry, we have a number of women and men. Seven of the key men are still with us. Six of them are co-laboring in the ministry, and four of them are on staff with us. So it was a very fruitful year in a great ministry that Gordy left behind. There's an influx of missionaries, and over the last years it's developed, and we've moved into eight further university cities. And these eight cities are represented in green: Bochum, Aachen, Köln, Bonn, Darmstadt, Karlsruhe, Mannheim, and Stuttgart. We've been very encouraged this past year. We've just begun the 2-7 program, translated and put it into action there. And already, although it's only a test year, we have about 150 people involved in it in eight different churches. So we're really looking forward to beginning that nationwide this September. We also are beginning this spring with three new high school ministries. And we're encouraged. It's taking the form of the Dutch Captain's Club ministries, and we're looking forward to that. There's a great opportunity there with high schoolers. God has really blessed our women's ministries, and over the last years, particularly the last 2 to 3 years, led by Mette Brolica from Denmark, the Lord has really blessed these ministries, and we're expecting in the next 2 to 3 years leadership to come out of this. These women's works, and they're located at each of the university cities. We feel God is doing a new thing in Germany. We're very encouraged. Although the student work is very tough, we're seeing them begin to open up more because of the difficulties of the situations in our economies and also in the politics of the world. They're listening, and we're beginning to see more and more come to Christ. We're very encouraged also that the Lord has made a significant step, taken a significant step in Germany by allowing us the privilege to get involved in missions. And this year, although it was just an IT, we have sent an IT over the border to Austria to begin a work in Vienna. And that's the first missionary out for Germany. And at a conference just about 2 months ago with a missionary project, with about 400 participants in this conference, they raised $54,000 in one offering, primarily for missions. So we're excited about what God's doing. We're claiming Isaiah 54, 2 and 3 as well. So that looks like it's making its round. Shifting over to another ministry, which has opened up, as you perhaps know, that I'm involved very deeply in the Eastern European and Russian ministries. And we for years have been praying for the big target, Russia. And we felt that probably the earliest we could get into Russia would be 1981. Security is very difficult, and perhaps even after that. We have several men being trained now for that, in that language and for that ministry. But we had it on our heart to get in there, and so we developed a cassette training program of 34 discipleship lessons. And through this, we hope to begin start a program of discipleship for some groups and some people, because we had learned that there are tremendous needs back there as the Lord is working among the people. And so I went in June of this past year to meet with a number of the evangelical leaders to see if this program would work, to introduce it. We had a tremendous response in each place, as I described the process of discipleship and disciple making, 2 Timothy 2:2, and the quality of building disciples and the future of multiplying laborers. God really opened their hearts to us and gave us great confidence, which is really unusual. And at the end of 1 5-hour session with a number of the leaders there, and in confidence, they turned to me and said a number of things. They usually speak a long time, and then finally someone interprets. And when it came back to me, they basically said this: "We've concentrated so long on the battle. God has sent you here to remind us to build the soldiers." And he said, when can we begin with the training?" So the Lord had obviously opened it up, and in September of this past year, went back in, met with a number of the leaders to choose and select the ones we'd want to start training. And since that time, we've had 5 training missions in there, and we'll be going in every 3 weeks, training 34 young, committed, precious believers in 4 discipleship training cells. And this was not, we didn't believe that we could get in on this. So that's a real thrill to my heart. We've increased the step up of the train, or increased the training to every 3 weeks because of the pressure of the boycott. So pray. I know politically I'd like to see the boycott go through, but from another point of view, I'd love to see it open so we can continue to travel. But we claim Revelations 3:8 in that God is opening the door, and he'll keep it open for us. Thank you.
You see, we have Germany here on this map. Now, some people seem to think that Germany is the best country in the world, so I thought I'd put it there so you could see where France is in relation to it. And since I've followed Paul, that's very appropriate as well. They have an expression in Germany. We used to say here in Colorado when I worked with Leroy, if someone really had everything going for him and he had a lot of advantages, Leroy would say he was in hog heaven or fat city. Well, in Germany, they say he was like God in France. And France is a big country, a country with many blessings, a country the size of Britain and Germany put together, with a population of only about the same as either of them. As was mentioned, our work began there with Gordy Nordstrom many, many years ago, and George Clark when they opened an office. There was a follow-up office after the Billy Graham Crusade, but later this was closed, and Gordy went to England, as Roger mentioned. So we went in 1971, my wife and I, to England for a year. And during that year, the Lord gave me a promise for France from Deuteronomy 8, where he said, "This is a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills you can dig copper." And to me, God was saying that the bread was the ministry, in this situation, and that God would give us ministry without scarcity in spite of everything that everyone had told us, and that we would find in the difficulties in France, we would find blessings, and that God would teach us by faith how to use those things to work for us. He's done that. I just wanted to give you an idea of France and the potential there. These red points are the university centers in France. France has the largest population under 25 of any country in Western Europe. We are located now in Strasbourg. We went there in 1973 after a year of language study. There are 53 million people in France. 85% of them are Roman Catholic, about 5% are Protestant, 5% Jewish, and 5% Muslim. This just gives you an idea of the progression of our staff, the growth of our staff. The ones that have don't have numbers next to them are ones that have now returned to their countries. You can see where they've come from. We have four different countries represented on our staff. These are area reps, except for the ones here that are marked as IT or missionary associate or woman's IT. Over these years, God has done a terrific work, and things began to really move about 5 years ago. Since that time, we've seen 200 people come to Christ. We have now about 30 to 35 ministering disciples leading others to Christ, and about 85 to 100 people in Strasbourg who are in regular weekly Bible study, and 8 disciple makers. There are some of these that look like they have good potential to become staff. We've been located in Strasbourg for 6 years, and as we'll be going back to France, John Ed and Nancy Robertson will be joining our staff, and we'll be going to Lyon and Grenoble. We're not sure which of those we'll be going to first. I think a highlight for me of our ministry, or two main highlights, have been about 2 years ago when Leroy was there speaking at a summer conference, and we were going to have a question and answer session. Leroy suggested to me that instead of some of us answering the questions, that we get some of the disciple makers and ministering disciples. So we had a dozen of these fellows lined up in front of the group, and we took questions that had been put in a question box or that they gave from the floor, and as I watched these men sit with their Bibles open on their knees, answering these questions directly from the Word of God, I knew that God had begun to do one of the things that's been my deepest concern, and that's in a Roman Catholic country, to see men who really base their authority on the Word of God, who give answers from the Word of God, and this was a very exciting experience. I think perhaps the second thing was when, about that same time, we were able to send our first two missionaries for the summer, when we sent two disciple makers to Eastern Europe, and the French students came up with the money to finance that trip, and these fellows had the opportunity to minister with the Eastern European team for the summer.
It's like we're not going to only wear out the microphone, but these transparencies. We want to add the Netherlands and Denmark to this map, so we'll hear from Herr Dornenbaal, who is the regional rector for Northern Europe and the country leader in the Netherlands, and then Dalai Semelink from Denmark. But in between you two, as we're following the chronological sequence, the navigators went into Kenya in 1956. So in between the Netherlands ministry and the Denmark ministry is Kenya. So we'll call on you, Bruce, right after Herrick is finished.
I'm Will Dornenbaal's brother. I thought it was a cross-cultural accepted fact that you don't learn from your younger sister. That's all I can say for my defense. In 1948... Dans was in our country and met Jean Carson. And she started diligently to translate the material and help him with the Billy Graham follow-up. And Dans was very pleased with what she did. He wanted to compliment her one day, and he said, Jean, I never met Dans, so I'm sure he didn't say Jean, but Jean. He said, Jean, too bad you're not a man. Well, what a compliment. She's still trying to swallow that one, she told me. So in the 50s, Translation of NAV material, follow-up of the Billy Graham Crusade, Bible's correspondence course, and in that time the European headquarters was in Holland, then Pyatt and later on Dirk Sparks. The 60s and the 70s can be divided in four parts. The first part of the 60s, three couples came from the States, Roger and Dottie Anderson, Lee and Marilyn Brace, John and Joyce Sackett, and a girls' worker from England, trained by Joyce Turner, Jean Lightfoot. Later on, in the early 70s, Bruce and Rosie Das, who live here at the Colorado Springs, served one term in the Netherlands. But early 60s, a foundation was laid by the missionaries through prayer and hard work and relatively not much fruit. In the second part of the 60s, relatively much fruit among the students. I think that was a worldwide shift to the student ministries and the first Dutch couples on staff. In the first part of the 70s, we see a transition. The Dutch leaders take the places of the missionaries. An explosive growth, I would say, in the collegiate ministries. God gave us a special target, the Christian Reformed students, very open and ripe to accept Christ. And the laying of a foundation for three new ministries in the second part of the 70s. In the second part of the 70s, we started the development of the Captain's Club ministry among high schoolers. And we had the mission. God in His grace allowed us to send a missionary couple to England, to France, Austria, Denmark, and Sweden. And we started the community ministry. Well, the expectations for the 80s, almost no expansion in the collegiate work. We are already in the best six universities we have. And just for you to know that in a small country like the Netherlands, with 14 million people and six good universities to work on, we have leveled off on that part. And the climate is not so good. The development, further development of the Captain's Club ministry, we expect that. Limited sending of reps, ITs, and MAs, because we have only six manpower pools to train them. Compared to the States, for instance, they have 20 times more university works. And that's something we should, just bear in fact. And we have not yet found a way to raise up reps and ITs in the community ministry. That's something to work on. Further guidance in the community ministry. That is what the Lord has answered some prayers, but there are some questions still to be answered. How to do this? How to have a community ministry in a country where the church is liberal and spiritually dead? But as a matter of fact, we believe that God will use us, and that one day, when the historians look back, that they will say the navigators were spiritually the repairers of the breach and the restorers of the streets to dwelling, as promised in Isaiah 58:12. We don't know exactly how the Lord will do it, but that's what we believe. Just a word for those of the U.S. here. We want to say thank you as a Dutch delegation. Thank you very, very much for your missionary endeavor. We appreciate your sacrificial giving and sending of men and women to our part of the world and to our country. We and thousands of others are walking in the light today because of this. Now, that's no small thing. That's an eternal great treasure. So in the name of the Lord and from the depths of our heart, thank you for your part in this.
Jumbo Sana. About a year ago, My wife's mother came down to Nairobi to visit us, and the jumbo is the word for hello. And so our African friends were saying jumbo mama to my wife's mother-in-law, or my wife's mother. And she thought they were calling her a jumbo jet. So she wasn't too pleased until after we explained what the word meant. Well, as has been mentioned, the Navigator ministry in Kenya began in June of 1956 when a team of five Navigator staff men began a Bible study and scripture memory correspondence course office at the invitation of the Pocket Testament League and the Africa Inland Mission to assist and follow up in the evangelistic missions in the Mau Mau detention camps. And our friend Doug Sparks was a member of that five-man team. After a short term ministry of this team, one of the missionary staff continued the correspondence course ministry and the administration of the office, assisted by a small staff of Kenyans, for a few years to follow. There was a succession of missionaries who occupied this position on one-term assignments until in 1965, when the departing missionary was not replaced then by another missionary. And at this time, as we've heard mentioned by several other people, there was a worldwide decision on part of the Navigator leadership that there was a new emphasis needed. So that by the end of 1967, this correspondence courses that had been developed to do the follow-up of these converts from the Mau Mau camps, this part of the ministry came to a close, and the Navigator office there in Nairobi was closed that handled these courses. The remaining Kenyan staff then took positions in other works and ministries around Kenya. Then a new era began in 1968 with the arrival of Jim and Jerry White. And their objective was to begin a ministry amongst university students that would result in recruiting to Christ potential Kenyan leadership who could be trained to carry leadership responsibility in the ministry of winning men and women to Christ and then developing them into becoming effective in reaching out to others. One of the problems they confronted in Kenya during that time was that it was difficult to get the depth we wanted because the students there only studied for 3 years. And so in 1973, Ove Tingard from Denmark was invited to come to Nairobi to begin a ministry amongst high school students. And this ministry has proved to be pretty much the backbone of our work there in Nairobi. And each year now, in fact, last year, we saw 13 of our disciples who had been trained and discipled at high school graduate and go into our university work. We concentrate with the high school students their last 3 years of high school. So we get 3 years with them at high school and then 3 years at the university. And it really has given us a great advantage because these young men and women hit the university campus their first year, recruited to the Navigators, and our NAV profile disciples. So it has accelerated our university ministry a great deal. Now the ministry has grown to include ministry amongst graduates in the business and professional community. And the first Kenyans to become qualified Navigator staff leaders since the student ministry began were appointed in March of 77. Presently, there is one Kenyan couple, Stanley and Esther Maragi, and three Kenyan single women that are on our staff. These three young ladies are the product of Lena Hagagore's ministry. Lena invested 7 years of her life there in Nairobi. Then we have 13 other missionary staff, including wives, which gives a total staff in Kenya of 18 people. One thing you might be interested in knowing, we've been concerned about how we could finance these Kenyans who are coming on staff, and we've done a lot of discussion about this. But just let me give you a brief little survey here, which I think will give you cause to rejoice with us. In 1976-77, We had income from 38 donors, these are Kenyans now, which totaled $1,741. The following year, 77-78, we had the income rose to a total of $7,070 from 81 donors. Now this past year, 78-79, the total income was $13,494 from 114 donors. Now, this is a very great encouragement to us as we see how these people now are rallying around the Kenyans that have come on staff and how they are giving sacrificially to see their own people be able to have time available to lead in this kind of a ministry. This past year, I believe, was the most fruitful year we've seen to date. And as we got together to record what the Lord had done the past year, we discovered that there were 115 people who had come to Christ over the past ministry year and 46 new Navigator Profile disciples. Now, this represents a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and prayer, and they are very, very precious, these 46 people. And I want you to pray for them, that God will protect them, and God will continue to motivate them to want to get their roots down into the Scriptures so that they will become like strong oak trees. Another significant development in the Kenyan ministry include an additional 8 to 10 Kenyans who are very close to meeting the qualifications for staff in the next year or two. Now, we don't have the plan to make a lot of people full-time staff, but are working more toward the idea of seeing lay staff people raised up. And we have about another 8 or 10 on the bench who are coming into this level for which we are very thankful. A local Navigator news bulletin we call Eneza, which is a Swahili word which means spread abroad or pass it on, has been developed to provide news and articles of encouragement to those moving outside Nairobi. Then we have just recently formed a leadership council composed of a majority of Kenyans who have been formed to take the responsibility for the Navigator affairs related to the Kenyans that we have on staff. Just in a brief review, the country leaders for the ministry in Kenya during the student ministry era were Jim and Jerry White from 1968 to 73, and then Marv and Georgette Smith filled in from 73 to 74. Noel and Karn Nelson then came from 74 to 77, and Marg and I arrived in 77, and we hope the Lord allows us to stay there for a few more years. Thank you very much.
Denmark is a land of the Vikings. 5 million of them are left today. It's a a small country, but a very nice country we love. Bob and Margie Wilbraham came to Denmark in November 57 at the invitation of George Hansen, who was a leader in the evangelical community in Denmark, and who had already translated some of the NAV material there for use in follow-up in big rallies, evangelistic rallies. And they started to work with a community type of ministry in churches and in the Youth for Christ ministry rallies in Copenhagen. A promise that God has given to Bob and Margie Wilbraham is Isaiah 58, verse 12, to raise up foundations for many generations. It has been a tough work in Denmark. But God has not left his promise unfulfilled. As you've heard already, Ove and Annemarie Tingor came up in those first 5 years of which Bob said was a desert time. Yet God gave fruit, lasting fruit. And they are in Kenya today, working with the Navigators. Then there was Mette Brolicke, whom we have heard also, working and serving in Germany today with the Navigators. Then there was Preben and Bente Müller-Nielsen, and they are missionaries to Thailand today. And then there was Bjarne Willer, who is a pastor in Denmark today. All men were continuing because Bob and Marge has been in Denmark, working for the Lord, winning people for Christ. Another promise that God has given to Bob and Marge was Isaiah 54, verse 2 and 3. To start in other towns other than Copenhagen. And in 1969, Ove and Anna-Marie went as the first, that was Ove only at that time, went to Aarhus, the other city. His first fruit was later on to be his wife, Anna-Marie. Another person I'd like to mention in these olden days was Ketty Johansen, who has served for many, many years in the office in Copenhagen and also in Sweden. She's married and is called Olsen today. In 1971, the Wilbrahams left for Bergen in Norway to start the ministry there, a very fruitful ministry. But their sacrifice for 14 years in that hard country is still felt today. We still meet people who know Bob and Marge, who has had an influence in their lives. And those who appreciate Bob and Marge in Denmark are still hurt today. People who appreciate them, what they have done for God. In 1973, Ove and Anna-Marie left for Kenya, and that left Denmark without staff. The country was closed. In 78, Denmark was opened again when Hratzi and I came to Copenhagen. What are some of the highlights of a work like that in Denmark? Bob said, first of all, the strengths that were developed in the people because of the difficulties, just the fruits of the Spirit of God. And secondly, just the people that God gave and the team spirit he had worked in. And I'd like to add their faithfulness and their sacrificial giving of themselves and of what they possess. Where's the ministry today? We have a ministry in Copenhagen and in Aarhus. And about 50 people are involved in Bible study now. And 25 of them are actively involved in evangelism once or twice every week. Only two of them are disciple makers. And about 5 weeks ago, we received our first two ITs from Holland, Kees Hordijk and Jan van Diepen, and they are totally immersed in language study right at this moment. What do we expect for the future? To find a way to win younger people, younger than students, to reach them at an earlier age when they are open for the gospel of Christ. Secondly, that God will give us men of women of stature, men of women according to 2 Corinthians 3, verse 2 and 3, that will be a letter of Christ read and known by everybody around them. And lastly, the same promise God has given to Gert, to Doug, to Dovs, to Doug, I'm sure, I don't know it, but to Gert, and to Bob, and also to me, Isaiah 58, verse 12, foundations for new generations. Thank you, you're praying for Denmark.
In the statistical information which we've seen in the last few days, it was noticed that there were 45 women reps on the staff. We have the privilege of having 15 of the 45 in our division. 14 of them are involved in country ministries, and Joyce Turner is attached to the Emma headquarters staff and has been the principal influence in the seven other Emma women who are here tonight. So Joyce is going to come and give us a report and then to introduce the other seven who are here, and then after her we'll hear from Norway and Sweden, Edmund Bolstad and Renus Balju, Sweden.
When Lauren asked me to go to England in 1956 to manage the follow-up office and to start a work among women, The Lord gave me great peace and a confirmation from the Word of God from Isaiah 41:10. This is a promise that has meant a great deal to me over 23 years now. We began with six women in a Bible study group, and by the end of the first 4 years, the Lord had increased the number to 60. Among them being Pat Lawler, whom you've heard about, Jeannie McGilchrist, Ann Horsford, who is now here in the States working with Bible Study Fellowship, and a few choice men, including Ian Monroe. These were years of basic discipling, of imparting a vision and seeking to mobilize the people for an effective outreach in the future. They were not easy years, but very rewarding and a foundation for future generations. Between 1961 and 65, we saw a development of the existing people and a period of further training in outreach. In 61, Dory Diddams came over from the States to help in the growing work. And during this period, we saw the women develop a heart for reaching out to others in their own sphere of influence, and also to develop in leadership ability and in their own responsibilities where they were there. Two women came on staff full-time at that period, Pat Lawler, assigned to London, and Ann Horsford, who moved to Manchester following a Billy Graham crusade. Then in 1965 to 70, we saw an expansion and further development in England among the women and ascending of several women overseas. So this is where our world vision really began, I think. By this time, many gifted, capable women had been recruited to the Navigator vision, or was it AIM, and were asking for further training. Apartments were established to give intensive training to women from Britain as well as from other European countries. And it was a delight for me to have a very international training apartment for a number of years. An air of excitement permeated the atmosphere on Friday nights when about 130 women would attend the Central Bible Studies weekly in London. Another 150 or so would be meeting in various Navigator-led groups throughout the city of London. So at one time we had approximately 300 women studying Navigator studies in London. At this time, Manchester had between 40 and 50 women involved, and Sal Beeston went to Loughborough to help with the women there with Rob and Meg Smith. In 65, as already has been mentioned, Maureen Dawson went to Norway, and a year later, Jean Lightfoot went to the Netherlands to help the girls over there, who had been eager for help because they had seen various staff and had met others from the existing ministries. And several other women during this era went to various parts of the world, including Nabil Jabour's wife, Barbara, who went to Lebanon, and many other women spread out into all parts of the world as what we would know now as missionary associates, and also with other missions. And today there are quite a number who are still in various parts of the world with missions. During this same period of time, seven British women took staff assignments and spread into other parts of Britain, the Netherlands, Norway, and New Zealand. Today we have two women's representatives from Britain in New Zealand. While this was happening basically as a result of the original work in London, in the 60s, women on the continent were also sensing that God was calling them to do something. And as a result of Maureen's time in Oslo, Norway, She left a very thriving work when she left for New Zealand in 1969. Anne Horsford was by this time over in Sweden, ministering to the Swedes. And in the Netherlands, we saw a growing number of quality women being drawn into the work. In other European countries, we also saw that God was touching the hearts of women, and they were determined to know Christ and to make him known. Through international conferences, through various types of travel and exposure, God gave them a heart to really establish girls in their own sphere of influence. And there was a heart for one another throughout the European countries, and we sought to help wherever we could. Also, Trudy Crawford arrived from the States and was there in the Christian Medical Center Hospital in Lebanon, beginning her work at that time as a layperson and later came on staff. The real expansion came between 1970 and 80, I believe, from the women trained in London and from those who had come over for training from other parts. The work then began to spread to Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, the Netherlands, Germany, Eastern Europe, and Kenya. So while this was happening up north, Trudy Crawford and other American and British missionaries were pioneering the work down there in Lebanon, and it's thrilling to know that there are trained laborers from the Middle East who are laboring in Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, and Egypt. In Ghana and France, as well as Germany, we have been reinforced by American sisters who have come over, and we're very grateful for their commitment, for their skill, and their co-laborship. Jim has given me permission to introduce my colleagues, and I want to say how very pleased I am to be able to work with these seven wonderful friends and co-laborers who are with us at this conference. I'd like to introduce Trudy Crawford first. Trudy from Egypt, ministering to girls in Cairo and Alexandria, responsible to Nabil Jabour. Also, she has a heart of care for girls in other countries of the Middle East and visits them, corresponds with them as opportunity comes. An American nurse by profession, Trudy now teaches in a Catholic boys' school several hours each week in order to remain in the country of Egypt. Great Britain, Maureen Dawson, whom you've heard about, is also a nurse, returned from her assignment in Pan in 1978, and now assists Steve Covell in the student ministries throughout Britain. Maureen? Beryl Stannard, also a nurse, I think the nurses have it, assists Roger Anderson with community ministries in Britain and also works with Tony Rogerson in the ministry in London. And London is a fabulous place to be. Both of these girls, I'm sure, would like for me to convey to you that they are graduates of Florence Nightingale's Hospital, St. Thomas's. Up in the frozen north, we have Norway, Karen Elizabeth Berg, who assists Edmund Bolstad with the Norwegian ministries and is responsible for girls in Oslo. She is a marine biologist by profession, a very intelligent young woman. Karen Elizabeth, thank you. Next door, in Sweden, Lena Hagegård is a multilingual executive secretary. Don't grab her now. Back in Sweden after 7 years in Kenya and assists Rinus Balju in the work in Sweden. The Netherlands, we heard last night from Bill Dornabal, a teacher and psychologist, don't get too close, is responsible for the Dutch women's ministry and works very closely with Lawrence Towen. Bill? We met Bill last night. And then lastly, but not least, Meta Brulica, a Dane, as you already heard, who was born in Thailand, I believe, and is a lawyer and judge by profession, is now working as coordinator for the women's ministry in Germany with Paul Stanley, as he had mentioned. Meta, where are you? Our judge. Each of these women serve with the leadership team in each of their countries. And we're grateful for the men with whom we work. And we've worked over the past years developing a philosophy of co-laborship between the men and women, which we believe is being a real help in enhancing our work among men and women of EMMA. The past 24 years haven't always been smooth sailing, but God has done great things for us, whereof we are very glad. He has certainly strengthened us, helped us, and upheld us by his righteous right hand. And we are finding that his promise is always true. Our trust is in him to further use our lives in hundreds and thousands of women, and to see them spread out into all spheres of influence around the world. We have only begun, we've only scratched the surface, but by God's grace, you'll hear more from the EMMA women.
As you probably understand, we are highly grateful for Joyce in Norway. So we are very thankful for her. During Dan Pyatt's counselor training classes for the Billy Graham Crusade in Oslo, 1956, he met Dagfinn Sæther, who became the first navigator contact in Norway. Through further help and a short training period in U.S., he was made the first rep in 1963. He translated the material and had counselor training classes for a Norwegian evangelist as his main contribution in the beginning. A highlight, a big step in developing the work was OTC, an international training program in Oslo, 1965. Through a coffee bar, a score of people accepted the Lord, and to help in the follow-up and to get the student ministry off the ground, Tom and Nancy Heeb, plus, as you have heard, Maureen Dawson, moved to Oslo this year. Paul Hensley and Jack Holmes, they stayed there a few months also to help. In the following months, several of the future leadership were recruited, like Olav Helland Hansen, Karen Elisabeth Berg, and myself. A regional director for Scandinavia, Noel Nelson, lived in Oslo a couple of years to give momentum to the work. And his promise was, say to the north, give up. Others, among them, Doug Sparks, was claiming, I will do a new thing. In the years to come, these promises became reality. Bruce van Wyk opened the second city, Trondheim, further north, 500 kilometers north of Oslo, in 1970. Bob Wilbraham, as you have heard, opened the third city, Bergen, in 1971. The coming through to 3 years were to be the most fruitful we have had in our student ministry ever in Norway. They stand out as another highlight. At one particular month in Trondheim, for instance, we had a convert almost every day. To my knowledge, both Tom Heeb, Bruce van Wyk, and Bob Wilbraham had Isaiah 58:11-12 as their promise, foundation of many generations. And I think it is right to say that together with Maureen Dawson, the Lord used them to recruit the foundation of future leadership. And for this, we are highly grateful. The raising up of national leadership has been a third highlight in our history. Today, we have 4 area rep, 1 woman rep, 2 contact staff men, 3 women contact staff, plus 4 office staff. And 3 more couple will this summer go full-time in the ministry. We have a workforce of 125. One woman rep, Unni Taraldsen, I believe, spent 7 years in Sweden, 72 till 79. This summer, another area rep is going to Sweden, that is Norway's Samaria. Several ITs, 5, have been sent out, plus at present we have 2 women staff in that is located in Vienna. Though there had been earlier experiments, 1977 marked the year community ministry got more attention and clearer leadership. Also from this year, ministry within churches has been developed. 2-7 is used under the leadership of Dagfinn Sæther in 2 churches in Oslo. And from 1979, we have an official ministry among high schoolers. We trust that in the future we will keep the momentum in the student ministry and even strengthen this work, that the community ministry, high school ministry, and 2-7 is going to be significantly developed. And that as a result of these works, God will provide men and women that will function in various capacities inside and outside the country. Thank you.
Norway, Samaria, that is Sweden, 8 million Swedes, in a country well known for its economic and social welfare, maybe the forerunner among the West European countries as it comes to this. That the Swedish navigator work has its origin in 1954 through a Swede who met Dawson when he was here in the USA on Minnesota University. He was a Swede with the name Paul Liljenberg. And so he became the tool in bringing the navigator work to Sweden. And in so after he met Dawes again during the Billy Graham Crusade in 1954, started he to translate the Bible, Bible studies and to print them. And till 1962 was it mainly a Bible study correspondence course which he held up, and there were up to 40,000 persons were enrolled in those. And in 1963 became Sweden one of the first European countries which got a full-time representative who was specialized in concentrating on students, and it was Noel Nelson, and who took over the leadership for the Swedish work in 63. Then in 66 he moved he moved to Uppsala, and there started in fact the student work which is about here near to Stockholm, and also in Stockholm in 67 started the work there. But in those years, in the 60s, Sweden was very rapidly secularizing through the, particularly in the 60s until deep in the 70s, religion was squeezed out of the, was squeezed out in the stream of economic and social welfare, materialism, socialistic influence. And Sweden became a model of the prosperous society with a lot of materialism and sexual freedom, etc., etc. And that made the spiritual climate, of course, very hard during that time, and it made it a real tough job to work in Sweden. And many have prayed and claimed promises and struggled to see a start of the realization of God's promises in Sweden and in this climate. And particularly Noel Nelson and Danny Repko, who are here, have had a part in that and can tell a lot about this this period. But it is clear that it are those people who have led the foundation through their prayers and struggles, and we know the promise in the Psalms that those who sow with tears will reap with songs of joy. And during the latter part of the '60s, the work started to become Swedish. There came Swedish students came to Christ, started to get responsibilities like Per-Olof Edström, Jan Persson, Lars-Göran Karlsson, and amongst others. And in the beginning of the '70s, that Swedish started sending its missionaries, Lena Hagegård, to Kenya, and Per-Olof and Lena Edström also to Kenya. And again, got Sweden American missionary help by Daryl Doyema and Dave Kraft. In 1973, Jan Persson started coordinating the work in the country, and in there was in 77 that he felt led to take a student ministry again in Stockholm. So where the ministry is today is that we have three student ministries in Gothenburg on the west coast, and Stockholm and Uppsala on the east coast. And we will start in September a new student ministry in Lund, which is in the south of Sweden. We have a small starting community work in the country and a small start of 2-7 series, mainly in Stockholm. And only recently we start to see signs that students start to doubt if the materialistic and solutions and sexual freedom, etc., leads to real happiness and freedom and to a future. And we start to see signs of growing openness on spiritual issues, also due to the many questions that have been raised in the world by economics and politics and so on. It is just the beginning, but it seems that God has given us some encouragements in the last years. To give an example, on the Technical University in Gothenburg, there were 700 students were interviewed, and there were 300 who wished to have a second talk with one of our people. Now, that is totally unbelievable for Swedish standards, but we have accepted it as an encouragement of God. There is a verse which is speaking to my heart and to us as a team of staff, and it is a little verse in Isaiah 43:13, and where God says, "I will work, and no one will hinder it." Well, and that is our only hope for Sweden, that God will work, and then no one, and not the spiritual climate, and not anything will hinder it when it's God who starts to work. And that is our prayer, that God's time has come in the 80s, that God's time is full. It's the fullness of time for Sweden to realize the promises where people have prayed for, have struggled for, and have given a part of their life to. And it will be due to that God starts to work.
Bob Venano, as you come up to tell us about the Middle East and introduce Nabil and Assam, would you, let's have Ray Stead just sing one verse of a song for you.
The Middle East, as Jim already mentioned, the ministry began there by Waldron Scott, and the first time he came out was in 1952 to Cyprus as a single man. And he almost killed himself and went back to the United States, was married, and then a number of years later, in 1960, moved out with his family to Lebanon, where he began the Navigator ministry. And soon after that, the next year, Nate Mirza joined him, and then Ida Honey, who became Ida Angier, and then following Pete Angier. And they moved to the little town. They were up in Zahle, in the mountains of Lebanon, where Scotty taught and worked with high schoolers, and the Lord gave a little band of high schoolers. From there, the high schoolers graduated, and they went to the American University of Beirut. So Scotty's desire was to follow him up, and he moved to the American University of Beirut and enrolled, and followed through, got his degree there, and discipled many of those men. During his ministry in Beirut, he discipled men like Nabil and Isam, who are now leading our ministries in Egypt and in Jordan. After 6 years in Lebanon, Scotty left in 1966. In 1968, Lauren Sani returned from a trip through the Middle East and asked Marilyn and I if we would consider going to Lebanon, and he said, spend the rest of your lives ministering in that part of the world. Well, first of all, we had to find out where Lebanon was, really, and then consider the rest of our lives. But December the 23rd, 1968, we arrived in Beirut. Now, I came to Lebanon to lead, but really, I did more learning than leading. Learning what I didn't know, and learning what I needed to learn. The first years were years of frustration. Frustration in seeing Lebanese disciples and disciple makers go to the United States for higher education, never knowing if and when they would return. Years of frustration over the Arabic language, the political situation, the challenge of Islam. Then in June of 1975, the Lord allowed all my frustrations to come to a head, which caused me to see the real issue. And alone with the Lord, he dealt with me over in the verse of Isaiah 42:8. I am the Lord. That is my name. I will not give my glory to another or my praise to idols. And as I read the verse, the Holy Spirit asked me the question, Bob, will you serve me the rest of your life in the Middle East if I never show you one result? The idol I was worshiping was my reputation. And as we faced Islam, the possibilities were that there would be very few results. And his question to me was like a knife. I bowed my heart to the Lord and told him I would serve him in the Middle East the rest of my life if he would not show me one result. As I did this, there was a great load lifted and a new assurance of God's provision and presence. And then, after that time, we began to see the Lord's vision for us in the future in that part of the world, and he was directing us into Islam. And the next verse after 8 is 9, which says, see, the former things have taken place, and new things I declare. And that was into Islam. September 1975, that fall, in between skirmishes of the war, the civil war had begun. Nabil and Barbara and team went from Lebanon to Cairo to open the work in Egypt as the Holy Spirit had pressed upon Nabil's heart the urgency to go to Egypt. And it was God's perfect timing because little did we know a civil war would tear Lebanon apart with 60,000 dead and 140,000 wounded. In November of 75, I took the family out of Lebanon as the intensity of the war increased. Isam and Abla Huri, as a part of the dispersion from Lebanon, went into Amman and opened the ministry in Jordan. And during the next 18 months, I entered Lebanon 3 times before being able to return in June of 77 with my family. When we returned, we found our home and car and office all intact. But during the time of our absence, the city had divided. Now all the Muslim were on the left, the west side of the city, and all the Christians were on the east side of the city, and our home and office and everything were in the west side where the Muslim were, and we took that as just good direction from the Lord that he was leading us into a new strategy with Muslim. Doug Williams and Jeff Hayes joined us along with these are two international trainees, fine men, are there tonight, along with Zareg Boujekian, who many of you met this summer as a result of Trudy's ministry. And in her nursing there, she joined me as my secretary, and we began the work there. Since December of 77 until 79, we've had 2 good years in ministry among Muslim focus group. We've learned much about becoming an incarnate witness, and yet we feel we've just begun to scratch the surface. A major adjustment in our ministry philosophy and goals has been to work with Muslim in their cultural structure and not extract or dislocate them. Muslim, as you may know, means one who is surrendered to God. And our goal is to help him see that this is impossible apart from being completely surrendered to Jesus Christ as their Savior and their King. And our desire is that they will become salt and light in their Muslim cultural structure. Pray with us that each one of the new believers will become truly Christ-centered. As Nabil and Isam and I co-labor together in the Middle East, we've chosen the name Middle East Impact Ministry. We've chosen this name because we desire to make an impact on our countries, cultures, and people groups, of which the major population is Muslim. As we desire to impact our countries, our goal is unified, but our strategies are different. And I'd like to call on Nabil now to tell you of the ministry in Egypt, and then Isam in Jordan.
Nabil? We are reaping where others have sown. Doug Sparks, Bob Vedano, Scotty, Dawson Trotman, and even Ezekiel, Isaiah, and Joseph. It's really a privilege being there. In September 1975, 2 years ahead of schedule, my family and I, with Fuad Libbous from Lebanon, moved to Cairo. Nadim Adil joined us in 76, Trudy Crawford in 78, and the Vanests in 78, but the Vanests moved to Alexandria. Egypt has a population of 41 million people, with an increase of at least 1 million a year, actually 1 million every 9 months. One of every three Arabs is an Egyptian. Christians in Egypt are 6 to 8 million, most of which are Coptic Orthodox. Both Protestant and Orthodox churches have the most encouraging signs of revival in the Middle East. Because both the government and the church suspect independent foreign organizations, we as navigators entered Egypt under the umbrella of the Presbyterian Church. And over the years, we developed some convictions. The following are two of them. Number one, in order for the navigators to make an impact for the Great Commission, and especially on Egypt, we believe that our greatest impact can be made through key leaders that God's hand is clearly upon. Number two, as Peter was an apostle to the Jews and Paul to the Gentiles, we have asked God to lead us to key men who will open the various strata and sects of society. God did lead us to some of the choicest men and women in Egypt. In Alexandria, the Vanests, assisted by Trudy Crawford on some weekends, are discipling at least 20 men and women in a Presbyterian church that gave the Vanests their work permit. In Cairo, we are involved with 5 Protestant pastors and youth leaders. Each has his own manpower pool, a church or a youth group. Trudy is involved with girls from 2 or 3 churches. Some of them are the key girls, but the most encouraging and stimulating ministry that I have is with a Coptic Orthodox priest. This part of my ministry is confidential. Please keep it confidential. I'm sharing it with you just to rejoice with you about what God is doing among the Coptic Orthodox. I have been meeting with this priest every Wednesday for 3 hours for the last 2 years and a half. He and his men have developed their own indigenous Orthodox profiles. They have the equivalent of the bridge, the equivalent of the wheel illustration, and the equivalent of the TMS. And now they are developing their Bible study materials. Instead of quoting Tozer and Billy Graham, they quote St. Athanasius and St. Augustine. This priest, whose name is Father Zachariah, is considered by some people as the Billy Graham of the Middle East. Now he is fully devoted to a ministry very much like the Navigator ministry and the Navigator vision. After 2.5 years of NAF-type ministry, his statistics at the end of December 79 showed that he had 28 Bible study groups, 123 people in Bible studies, 43 disciples, 23 disciple makers, and 3 leaders of disciple makers. Personally, this is the fastest work I've ever seen. Another distinctive of our ministry in Egypt is the Master's Press. It is a press for the Master. It is a press directed by Fuad and Nadim, the 2 Lebanese young men that came with us. And it aims eventually to provide a certain portion of the ministry needs of the navigators in the Middle East.
It is a pioneer project that could become a model for third world countries to develop in the direction of becoming self-supporting. Finally, in order to begin making an impact on Islam in Egypt, a fist is needed. I feel we are the little finger. This fist will be formed through the work of the various key leaders, the ones we are in contact with, and many others that love God and love the Muslims. This fist will be made through these men and who will team invisibly around the objective of reaching out for Islam. Therefore, we as a navigator team in Egypt are starting quietly, slowly, and wisely to reach out for Muslims so that we will demonstrate and be able to transmit to these key people the vision and the burden concerning Islam. Egypt is a hard place to live in. I think some of you agree. But when we are in our right minds, we thank God that we are nowhere else. We're looking forward to seeing God in action in the coming years, unless we go in trouble and we're kicked out of the country.
The population of Jordan is 3.5 million, 90% of whom are Muslims and 10% nominal Christians. The capital, Amman, has 1 million and has rapidly progressed in the last few years to become a growing business center in the Middle East. In the summer of 1976, my family and I moved to Jordan as a result of the civil Lebanese war and of the encouragement and acceptance from the evangelical churches there. The first 2 years we spent in serving the local churches while I was teaching full-time in a private high school in Amman. It was a period of acquainting the churches with the navigator's emphasis on personal training in discipleship by demonstrating that in the Free Evangelical Church in Amman. As a result, we have established close relationships and with the church leaders and have won their confidence. In addition, we have been and we are still helping foreign navigator staff to adjust to the culture as they spent 2 years studying the Arabic language and thus making Amman a center for adjustment to an acquaintance with the Arabic culture. This year, we have only one couple, Kim and Marlene Gustafson from Minneapolis.